Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
How do you wake up, Lady Gaga? You poke a face. Knew that would be a good one.
Oh, I love it.
Oh, he's gone.
Excellent.
Oh, dear. That was great. That was so good. I don't know if it's because I missed a week and I was just.
It might.
More
I mean,
excited.
It might be. But again, this ticks all the boxes, doesn't it? It's short, snappy. You know, it's not too protracted. It's easy to understand. Not saying you can't understand difficult jokes, Lawrence. I just mean that the jokes that you usually are on the more simple. All of that compliments when you join the Zoom before
exactly.
We record.
On this point, before we started this, Nate was sweet talking Lawrence, saying how great he looks today, how happy he was that he's back. And Lawrence saw right through it. He knew it was to try and bloat the score, but I think it was probably working until that moment.
He was like, Nate never compliments me, ever, until now.
It was working, Nate. It was working.
Let's not let that ruin the score. What's the score? And then I have something to add to the joke. There's not going to ruin the score, but
okay,
some context.
Well, what I particularly liked, for those who obviously can't watch our Zoom, is that Nate did a poke when he said, poke her face, which I enjoyed because I think actions
exactly.
added to a joke are good. So I'm going to give you, Nate, and this is slightly toned down because it was going to be higher if you hadn't said just that, but it's 9.3.
Oh my God, so it was like a 9.5.
Yeah, I loved it. I really loved it.
Well,
I haven't laughed that hard for a while.
So at this point, I've got to say thank you. Oh, little bark. Monty liked that rating.
Hi, Monty.
I have to apologize to Carl Shirley, one of our listeners, who actually sent us that joke.
Don't call me Shirley.
Yeah. We were going to do... We could have done that joke better. But I am serious. Don't call me Shirley. Because I feel like I've ruined his opportunity of getting a 9.5, not 9.3. So thank you, Carl, for sending the joke in. And apologies that my big mouth ruined the rating.
That joke send in as well was a DM on the Twitter feed. For the Padhawk, and it just started with hopefully Lawrence doesn't check this.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, it's confirmed. This be?
It's,
I was
confirmed,
so excited.
It's confirmed Lawrence does not, in fact, check our DMs.
Yeah. I do not.
Which is probably a good thing.
I was hoping it was going to be hate mail, but yeah.
Well,
no. Well, it would have been juicy, wouldn't it? We could have something to talk about then. Instead, it was just Nate getting more credit for someone else's joke.
Do you want me to score last week's joke as well? I don't know what the protocol is here.
Oh yeah, yeah. We said
oh,
you
I scored
would,
it.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but you gave it a Medlin score. I wanted a Barreto score.
Medlin was correct in that although I do love Monty, Medlin's dog. I very much do love Monty. Dogs scare me a little bit. So you took a risk in adding a dog to the joke. But I liked it though. I did like it. It was around the kind of 7.8, 7.9 mark.
I mean, the premise of the joke was basically, it wasn't like I added it just for fun. But I get what you mean. I didn't just be like, oh, I'm just going to add a dog in here just for banter. The dog was key to the joke. Anyway, never mind. That's fine. That'll work.
Yeah, 7.8, 7.9.
Okay. If I hadn't insulted you at the start of the pod, would that have been like an 8.1? Or did that not affect last week's joke?
Oh, no, that didn't affect last week's joke. No, no.
Okay.
No, so I wouldn't be that harsh.
For a very short
harsh.
Period of time.
Yeah. His grudges last for one rating and that's it. And then they're passed.
Well, welcome, chaps, to the Padhawk, and I'm very glad to be back this week. I'm joined by the guys who entertained you last week for 15 minutes, Nate Saunders and Chris Meadows.
I think entertained is a stretch, but yeah, it's good to have you back, mate. I think you're the anchor on which this ship rests.
So I thoroughly enjoyed that episode. I loved you guys randomly spending time on Google Maps going through Australian towns.
And apparently butchering all the names.
Don't call it random. We had a tweet from Lee on Twitter, funny enough, who said he was laughing at Nate and I pronouncing different areas in his hometown of Perth.
And he gave me a clarification. It's Yangibup. Yeah. I was saying it with a G instead of a J. Yangibup. Yeah. So it's Yangibup. I actually said to Meadows afterwards, I was like, if we ever get bored on the pod, let's just find where the next race is and just read out town names.
Well, I've got to give Lee a shout out also for apparently we said his suburb of Waikiki in Rockingham. So
we did.
Hello to Waikiki. And
was that the one that was next to is Waikiki next to the naked beach? Or the,
I feel
the
like
beach?
This is spiraling already.
Sorry, yeah, we've gone back a week. Sorry, Lawrence.
Well, I think what I really want to get to, and the thing I really missed the most, I listened to this pod not just to hear your dulcet tones, but to hear the review, and then you didn't give me the 60-second review, Nate.
Well, because I thought it wouldn't be right to do it without Lawrence here. In hindsight, it was an error because I could have recorded one anyway, but I felt like you had to be in the room, you know?
Well, it means a lot to me, and the wait, I hope, will have been worth it. So,
well, I mean, but now that you marked that review down, you know, now I wish I did do it last week. Carry this mini grudge.
No, hang on. As you just said, the grudge only holds for that short space of time.
Yeah, mine lasts forever. Like. mine are never ending.
Oh, I better remember that. If you've only got 1 minute to spare, want to know who finished when and where, sit
back, relax, because we got you. Here's Nate with the 60-second review. G'day, mates. I'll be honest with you, I really don't know where to start or finish or go with this review. So much to cover. Obviously, quite a busy race. I was going to sing for you all, but I don't think I'll do that. I'm just going to try and review it. Blow by blow, lap by... Not lap by lap, because we've only got 60 seconds. Which has not started yet. Okay? This is Nate's 60-second review, but it starts when I say so. Which is in 3, 2, 1. Bang! Mercedes win the Australian Grand... Oh, wait, no, sorry. George Russell leads into turn one. Lewis Hamilton gets ahead of Max Verstappen. Nice little move there. And that's the race, right? Wrong, unfortunately. There's a safety car. George Russell's car has exploded. Now it's a red flag. Alex Albon's car and a lot of gravel on the track. So that's a restart. Lewis Hamilton leads into turn one. Maybe he can win the race, right? No, wrong. Max Verstappen has a little something called Mega DRS. And sorry, Red Bull sponsors, but that's actually the last we'll ever see of Max Verstappen for the rest of time. Lewis Hamilton stays second. Fernando Alonso stays third. Carlos Sainz was fourth, but then wait, what's this? There's something bouncing around. Is that a kangaroo? No, it's the rear tire of Kevin Magnussen. That's red flag number two. This is where it all gets a bit wild. Going to be a lot of Civil War references here. Sorry, guys. Sainz hits Alonso. That's a Spanish Civil War. Gasly hits Ocon. That's a French Civil War. Sargent hits De Vries. I don't know what war that is, but it's America and the Dutch. So Stroll is fourth because Sainz gets a penalty. Very controversial. Stroll is fourth. Perez fifth. Norris sixth. Hülkenberg seventh. For a hot second, I thought he had a podium. Piastri, good day, mate. What a podium for the podium. Points for the hometown boy. It's all gone wrong for Nate. Joe and Sonoda rounding out the points. Bye. It was tough this week, I've got to say. I struggled.
you seem to struggle at the end.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. It's just because you see that clock running down and you suddenly realize there's no time left and I've got half the race to do. So it made it sound like I thought the safety car was for Russell's car exploding. Yeah. It wasn't. I know it wasn't for that. I should have said Albon. It was obviously for Albon. So, you know, don't come at me with your ats and your TikToks and your stuff like that. Okay.
I know. As you try and defend yourself for your potential misremembering of that race, of which a lot happened, I had to go straight to Wikipedia to check that Joe did in fact finish in ninth place because I totally forgot who was ninth in that race.
Yeah, yeah.
As you said the last ones.
I was like, wait a minute, did he?
Yeah.
Yeah, completely slipped like my attention. Great race from him to finish ninth and to completely go under the radar like that.
Yeah,
what a wild race. What was it like being out there, Lawrence? Because I imagine, because races like that, we've all been at them where loads happens and you're kind of sat there and you're like, what on earth do we do from a journalistic perspective? Like, you're trying to get your head around, well, what's the story here? Because weirdly, in those situations, the story isn't that Max won the race, is it? That's kind of like the fifth or sixth story from the race. It's always one of those weird situations. So what was it like on the ground?
It's not often that happens, is it really, where you're where you're focusing on other stories beyond what is happening at the sharp end. But I think it was mostly that there was just a lot of, I haven't been in a TV pen where there's been that much frustration for a while. Like Gasly walked off mid question.
Yeah, I saw that.
And he's never done that before. And Carlos, I asked him a second question after he said he didn't want to answer the first question. And he was like, no, I still don't want to answer this question. And then walks away.
Yeah. Well, he's never seen a driver like that. Never seen a driver like that.
He said he'd come back, and I bet he didn't come back.
He did say he'd come back. And technically, he didn't come back because there is no second follow-up interview. But I did see him, afterwards. Obviously, he was not very happy about what was going on. But I've never seen him that like teary before. You know, when he was doing that radio message. And then I've never seen him that frustrated afterwards. I think that kind of just shows how much pressure, not specifically he's under, but I think Ferrari are under at the minute, I think, because it was a P4, you know, it's a P4 that, you know, in the grand scheme of things, annoying, of course, but it wasn't a win or a podium. So I just think it shows how much pressure they're under at the minute.
Yeah, and he specifically hasn't had the best of starts to the year as well. So I think for him, P4 probably meant a lot more. But yeah, like, I was stunned by that radio message for that same reason. I was kind of like, you know, it was a clumsy move. Like, it was a, to me, it was a penalty every day of the week. It was obviously harsh that it dropped him from 4th to 12th and not 4th to 6th. But like, you know, it wouldn't have happened if he hadn't hit Alonso. So like, you know, you've got to take both those sides into account. They Ferrari are right. Like, he should have had his day in court, as they say. He should have been able to go and see the stewards. But I don't think the stewards would have done anything differently, really. It was just weird that that there seemed to be three different precedents for all those different incidents at turn one.
Yeah, which that's I didn't what I quite think understand. I think it's strange that you've penalised him for that and you've not done anything for Gasly when he made contact with Ocon, and nothing for Logan when he made contact with De Vries.
Logan's one was just dreadful. He just went straight into the back of De Vries. Like, at least Sainz and Alonso were kind of, you know, going into the corner, whereas Sargeant just went into the back of De Vries. You know, it was, you know, he obviously either missed his braking or didn't.
He's got his braking wrong. He said actually that he braked at the same point that he's always brakes, but obviously you can't do that when
that's a great rookie admission, isn't it? Like, yeah, I thought it'd be fine to brake here.
Well, and even if it was, like, yeah, if everyone else has braked earlier because there's a bunch of cars in front of you trying not to hit each other going to the first corner, then they're going slower at that point and they're not just going to jump out your way. But yeah, I was amazed that didn't get investigated. I get that some of it might have needed to take a bit of time because you had all three going on at once and then they're doing the clear up at the same time and working out how they're going to restart and what the order will be. And then maybe they go, right, these are the incidents we also need to review. Yeah, I actually kind of think it's a weird one that it's right to me that it was a penalty for Sainz, because as much as we can say, oh, it's a first lap incident, like, if you ruin someone's race by getting it wrong when they didn't get it wrong, surely it's on you. That's your blame, first lap or not. Yeah. And same with like the Gasly one, like the way you've got to safely rejoin, even more so when you know there's a whole pack of cars behind you. So yeah.
And he claimed, didn't he? He was looking to his left, but it's like, dude, like, you know, that's not how a racetrack works, right? You know, there's cars either side of you. Yeah. And they're coming through there faster than you because you're rejoining. So I was surprised, actually, out of all of them, I thought the Gasly one for that unsafe rejoin was the worst one, because it was pretty dangerous.
Yeah, and what it triggered, but, as well.
Yeah, but weird as well, wasn't it? So Sainz, no investigation, penalty. Gasly, investigation, no penalty. Sargeant, no investigation, no penalty.
There was an investigation for Sainz. It's just that they didn't ask him.
Sorry. No trip to the stewards. Like, he didn't get a chance to see the stewards. Ocon and Gasly did go to the stewards. Sargeant didn't even get, you know, didn't even get anything. But then the outcomes were kind of different. So that was kind of strange as well.
I don't want him going to the stewards, though. I hate that idea. Like, the amount of people that keep saying it, and he should have had his day in court, like you just said, I'm the total opposite on that, because which other sport do we say, yeah, go and argue your point to the ref right now? He's given a free kick. Well, let's see if it actually was one. Like,
well, football has been doing that for years.
That's, well, yeah, but the point is that it doesn't ever change it, and they're not allowed to or invited to or asked to. And God, would that slow the game down if you allowed them to every time? If you genuinely said, come and have a chat, let's see if I think that was a foul or not, having given it. Or, you know, I'm not sure if that's a free kick or a penalty, so let me just talk to everyone involved. You tackled him. Did I think you fouled him? Like, why did you tackle him? Why did you, like,
I think
none of that. It's got to be on the referee to judge it as they see it and just have a final. That's their decision is meant to be final. We'll never all be happy with every decision, but it should be that clear cut. And it should be like, right, stewards make the call. That's it. Drivers don't get to say. And if they're unhappy, they're unhappy.
Problem is, it's never that clear cut is the issue. But I get you.
Yeah, but no
you
sport can't... is. There's no sport that's black.
Yeah, I suppose so. But I think it's just the lack of. I would totally understand. I totally understand why Ferrari want this right of review into that penalty. I'd be pretty pissed off if it had gone the way it did go. You know, not. I don't think they're pissed off. It didn't seem like Fred Vasseur's pissed off so much at the penalty. He was more pissed off at why did the other penalties? Why did the other drivers not get a penalty? Why did different? We not? And why did we not get a chance?
And that
to
I
say?
Totally agree with as well. Yeah, it's been the inconsistency is wrong.
Yeah, in this instance, he deserved to have his day in court because the other drivers did. But I don't. I think you're right. Like, it's a slippery slope if you suddenly start saying, "Well, before we have the podium, eight drivers have to go and see the stewards." I don't know how that would play out. But the whole thing just needs to speed up. I think all these FIA processes. I think the FIA actually called the red flags pretty. I think we kind of spoke about it, didn't we, on the ESPN Unlapped pod that Meadows came onto the other day in lieu of Lawrence Edmondson, who was away.
All the Lawrences
were away. I think all the Lawrences were away. All the Lawrences were enjoying themselves in Australia. But yeah, so I think the FIA, you know, people give them a hard time. I think for me, they called the red flags. I think that, you know, I totally understood the calls, but just everything just takes so long in Formula One, you know, especially if you're watching it on TV, which Meadows and I were doing for this weekend. You're watching it and you're like, man, there's so much confusion and uncertainty. That's for so many points. It kind of ruins the experience a little bit when you're watching it. So that needs to change, definitely.
I thought
you were like, getting into the weeds.
Yeah, exactly. I thought Lawrence looked like he was ready. Just be like, you guys weren't there. You don't know.
No, I was going to say, because you guys probably had a good insight of what's going on. Like, I was watching it in the TV pen and doing bits and pieces in between. So actually, it was a bit harder to keep on top of things when, like, drivers coming in and out of a TV pen. But no, I mean, I'm gonna leave it there. I've got nothing more to add, chaps. Nothing more to add.
He doesn't want to get in trouble. But no, actually, that's a really fair point, though. Like, as much as Nate and I were saying that we were imposters last week and that neither of us had been there, thanks to Tom Hamilton's wedding, which I think we did give a shout out to on the last pod, but we were wedding-ing for the whole weekend, and it meant that we just followed it from afar. But you do get the ability, if you're just sat in one place and don't need to move and don't need to rush around and react to other things, like physically, it's easier to follow the whole race compared to, when you're in the TV pen and someone's talking in front of you while something else happens, you miss it. Worst one's qualifying, I think, when you've got like the Q1 drivers in or the Q2 drivers in and Q3's going on and you're missing laps and seeing if someone made a mistake or got something right because you're talking back to back to back, aren't you, with all the drivers that have come into the TV pen that were already knocked out.
Well, also in the, so for people listening, there's the TV pen that you see on your broadcast, but next to that, there's a mix zone, which, you know, we will go into from the print media and they'll kind of hoover up the drivers as they come from the TV pen through to the mix zone.
Not literally often, hoover them.
Not literally hoover them up. That would be interesting to watch, actually. I think that in itself would be a good spectator sport. But there's been times in there where, so, you know, before I go there now, I make a point of writing down the order, just you know, literally 1 through 20, like where everyone finished, even DNFs. Because there's been times when drivers will come up to you, you know, a Magnussen or someone who finished in the midfield, and you're there like, what did this guy do in the race? It's not because you haven't been paying attention to the race. It's because you haven't been paying attention to their race. Because there's been other stuff going on. So there's always this great question in the mix zone where, like, you can tell that's happened to other journalists. It'll be like, so talk us through the race from your perspective. Yeah. And it's a very open-ended question because they'll say something. You're like, oh, yeah, okay, that rings a bell now. Or they'll say, yeah, the tyre strategy was terrible. You're like, tell us more about this. Tell us more about that. Why are you upset? And a lot of it is just kind of you being like, tell us what happened, because you just miss a lot of stuff. So it is a much different experience being at home to being on the ground. And I think journalists in TV, don't they? They sometimes get a hard time for asking quite open-ended questions to drivers, but often they just haven't been able to follow the race enough to actually know, you to get into the weeds of a question with some people.
Well, yeah, for you, Lawrence, like, I guess you've got to go through all 20 drivers and ask, find out what the race was like from their perspective. When Nate mentions the mix zone, that bit's done first, but then because everyone's grouped together, you get maybe 5 or 6 minutes total to ask a few more and go in depth, and it becomes more of a conversation. But you've just got what, two questions to tease out the story of their day and each individual story? How many notes are you making, or do you just know that if you go with a stock couple of questions, you should be all right?
So during the race, I'm writing notes as things are happening, as if I'm writing a race report, and I'm hoping that as I write it down, it's going into my head so that when they come round, there's no real time, if I'm honest, to look down at my notepad beyond where they finished. to look at a specific question or anything. And I just hope that whatever I've written down and that positioning is enough to spark a memory of what's happened. But I remember I said to Bottas a couple races ago, I was like, I'll be honest, didn't see you on the telly at all, so I don't really know what happened in your race. And he was like, well, yeah, you probably didn't, because my race sucked. So actually, in that instance, that was probably a good way of doing that question, because it kind of told the story of it. But sometimes if the TV kind of follows the key battles, isn't it? So which is the sharp end and then some cool battles down the field. There are guaranteed going to be 4, 5, 6 drivers you never see on telly, or very rarely.
Yeah.
And beyond, like, if you can follow the timing, which sometimes you do, and you just remember when they stopped or those kind of things, realistically, what are you supposed to do? You're not, you know, you're not like someone who's just following their race on board for the whole Grand Prix, and you know that they locked up here and they had this move and stuff. You just can't, it's just not possible to do that.
So I used to have a, I'd get a notepad, and each page of it would be a team, and I split the page into two then for each driver. And I try and, yeah, quickly scribble down notes. This is when I did like NBC more than anything, so it's fine with the radio stuff. But I'd scribble down a note of the tire they started on. I always had that. I had their start position and finish position all set up previously with the starting tire that they would start on as well. And then try and make a note of their pit stops and anything they were involved in. And you'd end up with like certain ones where you had, I don't know, 10 lines of notes, like loads of stuff happening. And then other ones that were completely blank because you either missed it or nothing happened. But same as you, like that was then 10 different pages to flick through. At least 5 times you had to turn the page, where as soon as they've walked over, you don't have time to go, oh, hang on a sec. just flick through your notebook and be like, you're Pierre. Right, Pierre. Oh, starting on the medium. Interesting. Right.
Started 14th, finished 17th. 13th.
And overtaken. Yeah. Overtaken by. Okay, sure. Right. Let's go. Like, they're not waiting for that, are they? So, no. And you look, I don't know if it's just a personal thing, but you almost feel embarrassed to have to say to them, just a sec, I'm going to read all these notes on you because, you know, don't remember what happened. Because to them, obviously, all they know is their race. They don't know the rest of it that you know. So, they can tell you everything in the tiniest detail about what happened in their race. And when you know nothing, it just seems like, I don't know, a bit of a mismatch.
I think as well, like sometimes you see the reverse of that. I don't know if you've ever been in a press conference or like a mix zone where someone has been watching like the onboard of a driver's race and they'll say, you're locked up at turn 12 on lap 15. What happened there? And the driver will just look at them like, I don't remember that really. Because again, like their head is filled with like strategy, you know, pace, etc. They've not really remembered. Like, but sometimes they remember, they're like, oh, yeah, you know, I had a few lockups there or whatever. So you do get occasionally someone who goes the other way, but it's massively jarring when that happens because it's like, you know, this person obviously has just focused on this person's race, which is fine. Maybe they're there to report on that person. But yeah, I guess it can go both ways. I'd love to actually see you, Medders, just flicking through your notebook for like Pierre being like, hang on, no, wait, Pierre, this is, you're on my time now. You're on my time. No, Pierre, wait for it. Okay, and now go. You started on the soft tire, talk me through that, and just go line through your notes.
I like the way you raised the Lady Gaga poking finger,
yeah,
as well. And you were like, right, you're gonna wait for this. I don't tend to get in the mix zone too much anymore. I did in Saudi, so with radio, it's if it's a quiet race, I can go in the mix zone and get interviews that way. Because for our Saturday post qualifying show that we started this year, you needed better opportunities to speak to people because everyone goes straight into debrief afterwards. So when you wander the paddock for an hour post quali thinking, I'll just grab who I can grab, there is nobody around to grab. They're all in engineering meetings. Whereas post race, it's much easier. So yeah, I don't have to deal with that pressure as much as you, Lawrence, anymore.
It's a good pressure though, I think. I think that's probably one of my favorite parts of the weekend, because you kind of have to be on it. Like you have to follow the race. Otherwise you'll get called out. I do think there are some drivers who, if they're used to finishing like 18th, 19th consistently, they're not going to call you out if you haven't known the intricacies of their race. They're just not going to do it to you unless they're in a really bad mood. So I think sometimes they forgive you for that. But actually, part of the challenge of this job is trying to keep across everything and then trying to ask good questions and stuff. And I was watching those interviews. I felt pretty down, if I'm honest, after Gasly and Carlos interviews in Australia, because I was like, well, they didn't really say anything. They walked away mid-interview like, this isn't bad. But actually, if you watch the interviews back, that probably tells more about their race, just the way it happened, the fact that they were frustrated and walked off, than it would have done if they'd just given a long monologue about, oh, yeah, I don't want to talk about it, blah, 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 blah. So, yeah, anyway, that was my self-analysis.
I've just thought of one memory that's stuck out to me. That I remember going to Abu Dhabi in 2012, which was my third race ever. I'd blagged my way there. I don't need to get into that whole story, but it had been India before, and I managed to go there on the way like back towards London, fly through Dubai. So they let me do the race in Abu Dhabi as well. And it's the one where Vettel got disqualified from qualifying after hours of looking at whether there's enough fuel in his car. So he started at the back, and everyone's like, well, Alonso's going to, you know, almost wrap up the title here. But Kimi won and did the whole leave me alone, I know what to do message. And at the end of that race, obviously loads have gone on. You're watching Vettel, you're watching like the Alonso fight, you listen to Kimi, this is great. Big story that Kimi had finally won. And went down to Pastor Maldonado's media session afterwards. So this is a print session as well. They had plenty of time. And he'd finished fifth and sat down. He started third. I'd forgotten that part, but finished fifth. It was a year he'd obviously won a race. I sat down, I was like, you know, how was that for you then? Great result, top five near the end of the year. Like, you must be delighted. And he was gutted. And he was like, no. He was like, absolutely not. Like, were you not listening? Like, I lost Kurs midway through the race. I should have won that race. And I don't remember a radio message saying he'd lost it. I don't remember any info coming out that he'd lost it. No one else seemed to know. But me sitting down, like, smiley, like, wow, congratulations, top five, Pastor. And his reaction being like, screw you, man. I should have won this. I gutted. Was like, that's the thing though, if you don't know how their race went, if you assume how they should be feeling, you could get it wrong. So it always stuck out to me that I was like, gotta try and make sure that there's nothing you've really like big missed before you go and ask someone a question. But and that was, I had hours till I had to speak to him. That wasn't even like TV pen stuff. So yeah, just came to me that story. And you know, we do stories of following Formula One around the world according to our tagline. So
I had everything. It was a story. It was around the world. You literally went from India to Abu Dhabi on your way to London, three different parts of the world, and it was about F1.
It was.
So you can never say we don't do what the podcast says it's
to do. Speaking, though, of going around the world, you stayed on the other side of the world, didn't you, Lawrence?
Nice segue. That was very nice segue. Yeah, I stayed in Australia for another week. My sister lives in Adelaide, so I went over to Adelaide on the Monday after the race and stayed there till the Easter weekend, just to get to hang out with her, because obviously I don't see her being that much, being on the other side of the world. So I went to some beaches, went to a nice winery, had a generally lovely time.
It sounds like it.
It sounds very good.
Yeah, like Adelaide is cool, and going out into like McLaren Vale, Adelaide Hills, Barossa region, like there's so many wineries you can go to. Like, it's all about the wine.
Stop listing suburbs of Australian cities. No one cares about that, Lawrence. Who would do that?
Terrible. Yeah. This isn't the Yangebup episode anymore.
No.
Yangebup.
Oh my God, you're still getting it wrong.
And I went there. I lived there for 3 weeks. Not lived there. I stayed there for 3 weeks. Still can't get it right.
I mean, I thought that's just what we did on this podcast now.
Pretty much. I mean, it's what I do on this pod, for sure.
It's what Nate wanted to do moving forward. He was like, we should just do episodes.
I just was like, Medus, let's change the pod into this. There's nothing else. It's just us reading maps and finding nudist beaches. Not to go to, just to remark on. But it's funny, the last couple of weeks, so obviously, Lawrence, you were out in Australia. My colleague, Lawrence Evanson, was out in Australia. And one of my best friends, Ben, and his wife, Amy, who is Australian, were in Brisbane. So All I was seeing across various platforms of social media was just pictures of, and there's a few other journalists, you know, out in Australia. So you see all these incredible pictures just of beaches and, you know, different, like, I mean, Lawrence Evanson had a motorbike and he was like riding around the coast, which looked incredible. So I was very much, I had more FOMO about that, I think, than I did the race. Because, you know, you get to see the race here, but you don't get to do that stuff. So I was very jealous of you. Looked mega.
And the weather for the race looked cold pretty much the whole time. Well, I know it's cold because I spoke to someone else from Williams the other day who said they were there and they're like, way too cold, go all that way, it's meant to be warm. But then here was awful for a lot of it. Like, we had some pretty naff weather for the last couple of weeks, and you guys were there in the good weather after the race. Like, I'm not gonna say on holiday, because I'm sure you did some work, maybe. Well,
I did a tiny bit of work.
But you're already over
tried
there
to be efficient.
Yeah,
it's hard to work though when you're upside down in Australia. It's hard to
wow.
Dear, oh dear.
It's a classic. It's a classic old joke.
Yeah. Even the train horn just then sounded sad at that joke.
Yeah, it wasn't this. It wasn't this. It's
it's one of the upsides, isn't it, this job, that if you have traveled that way, like, it's not that you've specifically flown to Australia for a holiday. You've been there, you've worked, and you get the opportunity to be like, well, go and either see someone or explore something or whatever. That's definitely the big perk we get from covering F1.
Well, there's a great one I've got for June. So I'm going to the Canadian Grand Prix, obviously, which is in Montreal. And one of my friends, Ed, who I think you've met, Murders, he's in a band called Gretel Hanlon. And I just was asking him, I was like, mate, I've got to come see your band at some point. And he said, oh, we're doing an international tour. And I looked at their schedule. They're playing Toronto the day after the race in Montreal. I was like, that could not be more perfect.
Oh, hello.
Great opportunity to, because I've always wanted to go and see Toronto as well. So stuff like that sometimes in this job, you're like, that's too perfect. It just lines up amazingly. So probably spend a few days in Toronto. So any Toronto listeners, please do let me know anything I should go see, because it's a long way out. I don't know why I'm just mentioning this now. But yeah, it's a good example of how this job sometimes ends up being. I mean, it's amazing anyway. But for trips especially, you can just turn trips into a much bigger deal.
Well, I'm just glad that you're going to be in Montreal, mate. I think that means you can come and taste the world's best burger.
Yeah, well, I was the one with the gravy thing last year. I came with you last year, but I mean, I'll do it again. It was very good.
Oh, Barretto, you forgot he was with you last year.
You did. I mean, look, I'm going to be honest with you. That has just intensified my grudge now. There's... how could you? I was sat next to you when we had that burger as well. Literally, it was me and you. You were next to me. And come on, man. That is, that's a faux pas right there. No. I know I'm not always in Montreal, but that is, that's quite
that is bad. That is bad. I feel bad. I'm going to upgrade the Jake score, I think.
Yeah, is it 10? They've all been a 10 historically. No, I'll forgive you. I'll forgive you. It is difficult to remember who went to which race. I'll give you that. There's so many of them. But I was sat next to you and we did talk.
Thanks.
And
there we go. Nice.
We'll put the picture on Twitter. I literally could not be closer to. Well, I could be closer to Lawrence, but it would have been indecent if I was. I'm right next to him.
Sat between the two.
What a burger that was! You reminded me. I need to put that in for this year.
Yeah, it was really good. Really, really good. What's the name of the place? Give it a shout out.
I don't know if I should do that before, but the table. But it's
oh yeah,
Wagwa.
No, it's called Foie Gras in Little Burgundy.
But don't book it until Lawrence has. Their booking system is down, isn't it, Lawrence?
Oh, yes,
you, down. You can't book. The burger's actually pretty terrible, I thought. It was dreadful. In fact, I would never go back.
The good news is, though, there are a couple new places that we can try. Because Meadows, you're going as well, right?
Absolutely.
So, yeah, oh, that's good, because Meadows wasn't there last year in Montreal.
Stop it.
That's Meadows' first F1 race. I'm looking forward to that. That'll be fun. we like to have fun, don't we?
We actually do. You know what you've just reminded me of? Well, the one thing
that I went to Montreal.
But this again shows my bad memory and then our collective bad memories is that this is our 102nd episode of doing the paddock, right? No, but we did the 100th obviously 2 episodes ago, and then we remembered shortly afterwards that it was our 100th episode. And then you boys did the 101st. I thought, well, the first thing these guys are going to mention is that we've just missed our 100th episode.
And no, we were too busy loading Google Maps up at the time.
Yeah, we definitely forgot that.
Yeah.
Well, I just wanted to flag it, chaps. Fair play. We made it to 102.
Well, this is the 100th anniversary of our second episode, which I don't know about you guys, but I'm pretty proud of. That's a pretty big achievement.
And seeing as the first one was the pilot, that doesn't really count.
Yeah.
And then, I'm sure there's been some that was so bad that we should really forget that they existed. So,
last week's one wasn't the three of us. So technically, it wasn't an episode. So drop the pilot, drop last week's one. Happy 100th episode!
It was all brilliant. Planned.
Ah, what an achievement, guys! I'm so glad we just got to 100 episodes today. But no, TV shows do that, don't they? Sometimes they'll just reorder episodes, and they're like, "No, that's our 100th episode." And you actually go back and count. You're like, that's like your 98th.
It's like the Grand Prix, wasn't it? Like, it was like, which one's the 600th Formula One World Championship race? Or which one, you know, the stats were like, well, this one didn't count. Or this one was only run with X number of teams and all that sort of stuff.
Oh, yeah. So
we'll let everyone fight over it. But we're celebrating it now, apparently.
Yes. Okay. I should have got some champagne to celebrate.
Should have done. Ping. Lawrence is now acting like he's opening champagne. Which was as tragic as it sounds.
that's normally the sign that he's lost it and we should probably go.
Yeah, well, let's call it quits. Well, I've loved being back, chaps. Thanks for having me back. Thanks for letting me back.
Yeah, welcome.
It was a tough, we weren't sure about call, it, honestly. We were like, should we let him back in? Let's give him a trial run. But it went well.
Well, I'm very glad that you did let me back in. Thank you very much. We'll do this again, shall we?
Yeah, here's to 102 more. Bye.
Yeah, I was going to say, didn't even plug our stuff. Outrageous.
Sorry.
No, that's true. I didn't plug our stuff. Okay, well, you know the score. You can read Nate's work on ESPN.com, Menace's work on Vase.com, and my work on F1.com. And Nate's lost it.
Bye.
Network.